Ukraine conflict is also a NATO conflict. And I welcome Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired, Dickinson College, CBS News, and Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy, to comment on what we know now of the NATO strategic concept document from the Madrid meeting just recently concluded, a war council, as Jeff calls it, in an essay that he has sent on to me. At the same time, I want to mention that Colonel McCausland is a veteran of Desert Shield and Desert Storm. And there's an event coming up next week, which will explicate at length of a dedication, a memorial on Bastille Day in Washington. Good evening to you, Colonel.
John, good evening to you, sir.
The dedication of this memorial, it's very important to you veterans to have this. You're looking forward to it, and we'll talk about it at length. But right now, we're talking about a war that's ongoing with an uncertain outcome. You have written remarks about how you regard the most recent NATO meeting in Madrid, and I want to read a paragraph from the strategic environment of the strategic concept. Everybody can see it on our website. Go to NATO, you'll see it. The Euro-Atlantic area is not at peace. The Russian Federation has violated the norms and principles that contributed to a stable and predictable European security order. We cannot discount the possibility of an attack against allies' sovereignty and territorial integrity. Strategic competition, pervasive instability, and recurrent shocks define our broader security environment. The threats we face are global and interconnected. Jeff, you're a veteran of NATO. I believe this is scary language. Are you surprised, Jeff? Good evening to you.
No, John, I'm not surprised at all, because we know the environment we're in. This may be a surprise to these world leaders, because, of course, this particular conference was planned for many months, and I'm sure they did not anticipate until the 24th of February, when Russia did in fact invade Ukraine, that this would be the second council of war. The first council of war for NATO was actually in 1999 when they arrived in Washington initially to celebrate the 50th anniversary, but it ended up being a council of war over the campaign in Kosovo against Serbia. But clearly this document tries to pull together the strands of the emerging threat and then the response that NATO is going to take in terms of expanding production and purchase of military equipment, putting more troops on alert status, admitting new members, and talking as well about nuclear weapons as a component of overall NATO deterrence and defense posture.
I'm glad you mentioned nuclear weapons, because since the end of the Cold War, it's presumed that that was then and this is now. NATO regards strategic nuclear weapons as the guarantee of the alliance. It's striking, Jeff, but then again, this document also includes the People's Republic of China as a bad actor. We're looking at a landscape that you did not face in the 20th century. The PRC is building silos, up more than 300 of them, that can house ICBMs. We'd have an undetermined number of nuclear weapons in China. At the same time, Russia is boasting about upgrading its nuclear facilities. That's the end of the world stuff. So is NATO on a military war footing? Is that where we are now, Jeff, or is that the intention?
Well, certainly the intent is to harken back to the mission of NATO, which is the collective defense of alliance members, crisis management, and creating a force posture that deters conflict, but is prepared to defend and execute conflict if that occurs. And you're right, John, not only does this concept describe Russia as an immediate threat to international peace and security for the allies, but for the first time it talks about China ever and describes Beijing as a challenge to allied interests, security, and values, as well as the Chinese making an effort to undermine the rules-based international order. You know, John, it's very interesting to me that for the first time ever, the leaders of Australia, Japan, New Zealand, and the Republic of Korea actually attended a NATO summit as observers. And furthermore, I think what this suggests to us as we look out to the future more broadly is, you know, way back when in the Obama administration, we talked about a pivot to the Pacific, that we're going to emphasize our force posture in the Pacific more because stability had been achieved in Europe. That now is a false choice. And the United States wants to think globally once again. And second of all, the arguments by some European leaders, most notably President Macron, about a European strategic autonomy. That is also a false choice. And greater cooperation, not only amongst NATO members and new NATO members, Finland and Sweden, but more globally with our Asian allies, is what's going to be required to meet the challenges of the 21st century.
There is fragmentation. You know this, Jeff, in NATO. Boris Johnson's troubles in the United Kingdom now impact very much the credibility of NATO everywhere, because the Brits were taking the lead. The adamant remarks by the foreign minister and by the prime minister, his two visits to Ukraine, were a big part of the effort to show Russia that we were standing with Ukraine. He is now no longer in the picture and momentarily may no longer be in the office. I mentioned Mr. Macron is facing a parliament now with a minority government, and Olaf Scholz has compromised completely by his coalition of Greens, who are very unhappy with his plans to reopen or continue to stay open coal-fired electricity generating plants, even keeping their nuclear facilities online longer than they expected. So we do not have unity in NATO. What do you recommend next for NATO? Because your paper is very clear. The Kremlin sees NATO as a threat. This disunity in NATO, is it a problem? And does it help the Kremlin to feed this disunity?
Well, certainly the cornerstone of NATO is Article 5, that an attack on one is an attack on all. But that also implies what some have suggested might be a weakness, and that is NATO operates under consensus of all members. And so fragmentation can be a real threat. I think you've painted the picture of the political challenges that European leaders have, and Mr. Biden himself is suffering from low popularity, and many in his own party have already argued that based on his age, certainly, that he should not run for re-election in 2024, something he, for the moment at least, seems to dismiss. But that being said, I think what this document suggests, the strategic concept, is that willpower and patience is going to be demanded across a generation of European and American leaders. It's not just for Boris Johnson, Olaf Scholz, Macron, and Biden to deliver on what has got to be the promise of NATO. That has got to be something that parliamentarians, congressmen, and senators across the alliance continue to do for what may take even decades, not unlike the Cold War. It wasn't a single American president that persevered through the roughly 50 years of the Cold War. It was a whole series of American presidents on both sides of the political aisle, and that was same and true in Europe. And so it must be that challenge of willpower and patience that's required, because right now I firmly believe Mr. Putin believes his willpower and patience in the current conflict is far superior to NATO, and that he can wait them out as those internal challenges you suggest gnaw further on the unity of the alliance in meeting the challenges in the Ukraine.
So your case then is the case from the original NATO. It was understood as a test of wills between Moscow and Brussels in the original NATO. This is the Cold War that you fought. You see it as the same contest now. The Kremlin is asking itself every day, how long will they stand up to us?
That's exactly right. And of course, I think that challenge goes beyond, because of course, the mentioning of China suggests that even if this particular war in Ukraine was to end tomorrow, we both know, absent the departure of Mr. Putin from the political scene, the threat posed by Russia will not depart. But the longer term threat by China is the one on the horizon that will not disappear under any circumstances. Right. There's little doubt, if you check economics and demographics, that over the next decade, the Russian Federation is a declining power. That there's no question about it. Yes, they can cause enormous problems and conflicts in that intervening decade. But the challenge of NATO for the future, which is going to demand real willpower and patience, I think is in the Far East as well.
I'm speaking to Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired, CBS News, Dickinson College, and he is the CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. We're going to turn to the battlefield next, because the Kremlin is now claiming success, pacification of the Donbass. Not quite, but in any event, what is ahead? And Jeff has also provided me from the United States a list of the equipment that's flowing there. I don't recognize all of this, so I'm going to ask the colonel's help to understand some of these weapon systems. This is CBSi on the World. I'm John Batchelor.